You're listening to Tucson Tech Talk with your host, Aaron Moss, on Tucson Business Radio X.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Tucson Tech Talk. I'm your host, Aaron Moss. We're broadcasting from the Tucson Radio X studio in the Stuart Title Building on Broadway in Tucson, Arizona. Our focus on the show today is technology when it comes to protecting your identity. This is a special show because, number one, it's the first of our video series that we hope to keep going. We're going to see how this goes. And also wanted to introduce our co-host, Sherry Barker. She's going to be with us hopefully for a long time on the Tucson Tech Talk show. And I thought one of the things that we can go over is, you know, I'm actually in the process of writing a book, okay? So there is I have a list here, a long list of things that you can do to protect your identity. It's about 79 things. Now, we're not going to go over all 79 things, but because it's only a one-hour show. But we're going to be talking, and by the way, Sherry is a technology expert in her own field. She is actually she actually runs the SB Creative website. And tell us a little bit more about what it is that you do.
Yeah, I have a digital marketing agency. So I work with local business owners with email marketing. I design and develop websites. Mm-hmm. And I have a new online review management service called ReviewBetty.com. And that is to manage the Google My Business and help people acquire online reviews.
Okay.
Which is very important to their local search ranking.
Okay. And by the way, my name is Aaron Moss. I'm with Computer Doctor of Tucson, if you haven't noticed. So, we're going to make sure that both of our information, because we both run businesses right here in Tucson. So we'd love to maybe evaluate some of the things that you're doing online or with your technology. To get into our meatier part of the show, things that we can do to protect our identity. Now, the reason why this is a big problem now is because there's so many different ways for people to hack their way into your life, or to even you put up a security where you don't want something, where you don't want people to even have access to, but at the same time you still need access to it yourself. So there's lots of different ways that people can actually steal your identity. There are some ways that you're probably aware of, and then other things that you're not aware of. So we have this list here, and we're just going to see how many things that we can hit for everyone's benefit. There's the first one that I want to mention is to pay inside when you go to the gas station. So, Sherry, why do you think we want to pay inside?
I think almost every time that my credit card or my debit card had to be shut down because of fraud was because I had been to some sketchy gas station that I don't normally go to, mm-hmm. and they had one of those readers.
Mm-hmm. Now, by the way, it's not the gas stations that are the problem. It's what ends up happening is some of these gas stations, they're targeted. So what somebody will do secretly is they'll put some sort of device that scans your card as you're trying to pump your gas. You pay with your credit
skimmer.
Card.
Skimmer, yeah.
They're called skimmers. So if you ever want to do any more research more information about that, do information on skimmers. So the way that works is they skim your card, or they make a copy of the information on your card when you scan it. And then if you put it into debit card mode, they put a little pinhole camera someplace near that keypad, and they actually record you actually putting in your PIN number. So they have the information of the card that they could always replicate into another card, and they have your PIN number, okay? And by the way, you have no idea that this has happened. Okay. It's, you know, so the workaround with that to be more safer, to protect your identity, is what? What do we do?
Paying inside, but also there's a, as of next year sometime, I can't remember the exact date, but all of the gas stations are going to be required to have the Apple Pay, Google Pay stuff set up. Right at the pump. I know all the new speedways in town. Mm-hmm. They are equipped for that now, but it's not active yet. But you can see it on the pumps, and all the gas stations are going to be required to have that soon.
Okay, so again, to protect yourself from identity, you want to pay inside of the gas stations, or something I've actually heard, it actually does work to actually cover. I know this sounds kind of silly, but covering your hand when you're actually putting, even if there's nobody around, cover your hand when you're punching in your PIN number. And if you can block, if there are any cameras around trying to record your activity, if you block that can, you know, that can stop it. Okay. And always, this goes hand in hand with a lot of these things that we're going to be talking about, and that is always be looking at your statements. Okay, if there's something on there that you didn't do, okay, make sure you're calling your banking organization or your financial institution for that. A moment ago, Sherry had mentioned something about using Apple Pay or Google Wallet. So what exactly is that, and is it secure? Can you tell us something?
So Apple Pay is now on all the iPhones, so you can register your credit cards and debit cards into Apple Pay, and then when you're at the store, at the gas station, if they're equipped for it, then you can just hold your phone over the what do you call it?
Right, yeah, over the reader.
Over the reader thing.
Okay.
And then it's not your actual debit number or credit card number that is transferred. It's actually encrypted. And then you'll get a receipt on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually very secure. So
that information, when it's being transmitted, it's actually encrypted. So if somebody were to try to get the information that's going between there, okay, it's just going to be gibberish to them. So thank you for that. Something else I wanted to mention. There is there's this new technology. I failed to get the information of it. I forgot the name of the company, but if you do a Google search for this thing called Flycard, it's Flycard is spelled FLYE. It's by a vacation package, a travel company, and their main business is helping travelers save money on nice vacations. But they actually invented this really cool card. It's like a smart card. It's actually the thickness of a credit card, okay? But there's actually a microchip in there. I'm not talking about the chip reader, but there's like a microchip in there. This is actually powered, okay? It has buttons that you can push. You can actually create a PIN number that you have to punch in the card that turns the card on. And once the card turns on, there's a little light that comes right on the card. And when that light is on, that's when you're able to use it. When that light is off, even if somebody steals the card, it's worth nothing because it's off. Only you're the one that can turn the card on. So that turning on and turning off feature is awesome, you know, because if you're not authorizing something, or if you're about to pay for something, groceries, gas or something, you punch your PIN in privacy, then you hand your card over. Okay. They see that the light is on, it's active, it's ready to go. And then as soon as that transaction completes, it shuts back off. And you put
it
back in your
wallet. Is this like a monthly fee that they charge for it?
I think there's like a $100 initial charge for it. But the nice thing about it is you can load all of your credit cards into this one card. Okay, let's say that you have four or five credit cards. You can load all of these credit cards into that one card. And then when you activate it, you can tell it which card you want it to be.
Just like the Apple Wallet.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like an Apple Wallet, the same functionality of the Apple Wallet, but in the card. So I think that, you know, that's an awesome thing to do, you know. But do some research on the Fly Card. Again, that's F-L-Y-E, Fly Card. And so that's it for that one. The other one that I kind of wanted to touch on was to be wary. I have here to not use digital copiers. So, as many of you know, I've had over 20 years in the computer business, but I've also had a lot of experience. My start was actually with the Xerox Corporation, so I did a lot of service on printers, scanners, fax machines, things of like that. And right around when they were transitioning from analog systems to digital printers and copiers, that's where I kind of started my career, right around that time that offices were making that transition. And a lot of people don't know this, but in order for a digital copier to work, it has to first scan it digitally, and then it just prints it out from memory. That's right. I said print it from memory, which means that those machines have a memory. They have both RAM and storage. A lot of people don't know that. So there is a hard drive inside of these digital copiers. So if you're making copies of something that's top secret, make sure that it is yours. And if you ever decide to close up shop or sell your business, okay, make sure you're pulling the hard drive out of these digital copiers, because it's not that difficult to just pull the hard drive, have some free software on the internet, plug that into another computer, and they can see a couple of years worth of documents that were either scanned or copied using that machine. And a lot of these times, especially if you're a tax office or attorney's office where you have, you know, secret, or a medical office, you know, where you have a lot of this stuff, okay, people, and you know what, they resell a lot of these computers, and a lot of these copiers at auction.
Yeah.
So you can have hackers that are just bidding on, you know, I go to auctions myself when gaining inventory for things that I resell. But many times these hard drives are not removed from there. And so you need to be careful of even that. Now, it's something small, but when someone actually gets hacked and you say, oh my goodness, how did they do that? Well, these are some of the ways.
I didn't actually know about that one. And I'm paperless now, so I don't even have a printer at home. But I believe I've sold some printers and copiers without knowing that.
Well, by the way, this is only for like the higher end, you know, copiers, you know, like the El Cheapos that you get it to, you know, other places. You know, it's probably, you know, they probably don't have any sizable memory in those, so you don't have to worry about like the really cheap ones. But like the office brands, the large ones that sit
HP
on the floor,
OfficeJet,
yeah, those, you see, those have hard drives in them. And if you're not sure if yours has one, it's not that hard to just call the manufacturer or just look online to see if it does have a memory on it. Something, the next piece that I wanted to talk about is keeping personal space. Now, there's a, you know, this happens a lot when people travel, okay? There's this understanding of personal space. You know, here in the United States, you know, when you're interacting socially with people, let's say you're talking to somebody, you don't get right up in their face, right? There's this mutual respect of personal space. You don't get right up close to somebody. But there are some close contact things that people can do, you know, while they're in very, very close proximity to you. Number one, they can there are these scanners that they can, if they get close to your pocketbook or close to your where they know where your wallet is, and they can be scanning transactions on your card that hasn't even left your wallet. It's still in your wallet, so you can get one of those. What do you call it? Those It's one of those things where it blocks the signals coming in and out of your wall. I think it's like an EF blocker of some sort, like a radio blocker.
Mm-hmm. It's metal. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called right now. It's terrible, but yeah.
So Google that. Do that. The something to the effect of the safe wallet or the radio interference wallet that has some of these layers inside of it that block signals from getting in and out of the wallet. So once you put your credit card in the wallet, okay, it's safe. So even if somebody comes up to you in close proximity to you. The other reason why you want to avoid you want to respect that personal space, I saw this report. And I hope this never happens in the United States. If this ever gets to the United States, this is terrible, terrible. There is this hallucinogen in a powder form. And what somebody will do is they'll pretend that they're lost. And they'll see you on the street and they'll say, "Excuse me, how do we get here?" And they'll put a map in front of you. And while you're looking at the map, this is just a con just to get you to get close to them.
Distract you.
And what they'll do is they'll either snap the map or they'll pluck it in some way, and the map has this powder laced on it, and it becomes airborne. Like they'll snap the map of some sort, or they're like, and now you're breathing this stuff in. What you have just breathed in is this drug that makes you feel like it puts you into a frame of mind. It makes you feel like a child, and then they can just lead you like a child, and they can say, "Oh, okay, where do you live? Oh, I live over there." And say, "Okay, well, let's go home."
All your inhibitions,
yeah, gone. Yeah, they're all gone. And there was this one case of this woman she was very, very close in proximity to this other gentleman. Well, I shouldn't even call him a gentleman, but he got her to inhale this drug, and he got her to inhale this drug, and he led her to, she ended up leading him to the apartment, and she even helped him move all of her furniture out of the house into his truck. Okay. And then he took everything from her, her money, her clothes, her furniture, her jewelry. He cleaned out the entire house. She even lived in a doorman building, okay? And when she woke up and her house was empty, she went down to the door. Did you see what happened? Who took all my stuff? He says, "Well, yeah, you helped him. you were helping them load the truck. I saw you, you know?" So it's like, you know, how do you stop stuff like this, you know? You want to keep that personal space. Okay, both from, you know, the drug part and from the scanning your credit cards in close proximity. So Sherry, do you know about hiding your router's SSD? Do you know about that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I mean, I know how to do it. I'm not sure I can sit here and explain it to somebody on the phone. That's more your department.
Well,
I know what it is. I know how to do it myself.
So you'll just represent the public that may not be aware of this. So, on your internet, when you have internet coming into your house, there's a router. Okay, and if you're connecting wirelessly to your system, okay, you turn on your device and there should be a list of networks that you can connect to. But those networks have names. And anyone that has a device that's in that general proximity, they will have access to, they can see those same things, you know, the same thing, same way that you can. So the idea is that you're supposed to hide your SSD. And there is a setting. If you go into the settings of the router itself, you can actually tell the router to not broadcast its name.
Right.
Therefore, if somebody were to come around trying to find or trying to pick up a Wi-Fi signal or something, yours is not going to show up. It's not supposed to. Sometimes they do on some devices. But it won't show up with the other list of the others. If they don't know that it's there, they can't try to hack it.
So it's better to hide it than to make it into than to change its name to like FBI surveillance van or.
Is that what people are doing?
People make jokes out of their Wi-Fi or network. So.
Or if your neighbors, you know, don't.
Mine is actually called LAN down by the river.
LAN down by the
LAN, river? LAN, local area network.
Oh, okay.
Down by the ha-ha instead of van down by the river.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, see, you can get a little bit creative with these things, but
the it's same, better to hide it.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of SSDs, auto join. So there is a feature on most smartphones. Now you said earlier to me that you're still rocking the iPhone 6.
6S.
Okay. So I'm just letting everyone know this is October 2019. Sherry is still
You don't need to call me out on the carpet. Okay. I have like everyone calling me out on the carpet about
okay.
it.
Okay. But the 6S and all the I would have to say
going way back, even the iPhone 4
had iPhone that. 4 had the that too.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a feature called auto join. So why do we want to shut off auto join?
It's annoying. You're going to be stopped at an intersection around stores and you're going to be asked to auto join, you know, if you want to join all these different networks. So you should just shut that whole thing down. But you want to turn off the feature that asks you if you want to join, because every time you drive down the street, there's going to be all these businesses with Wi-Fi set up and your phone's going to be going off asking you to join all these. If you auto join, it's not going to ask you. It's just going to hook up, and that means that you could potentially be hacked. It also is miserable for your battery. If you want to save your battery, then you need to control that so that you're not auto-joining, but it's also not asking you to join.
So there are things that are annoying with it, but there's actually a very serious thing that actually relates to privacy and identity theft with that. So if, like, let's say, for example, let's say that you have Cox or Xfinity internet at your house, and, you know, since this is a national show, you know, just fill in the blank of whatever. It could be a Verizon or AT&T internet that you have at your house, whatever it is. When they send you that router, okay, that you pay $15 a month for or $7 a month for, that router that they send you, that router provides your internet, and it also provides public internet for people that are also clients of that company. For example, Cox internet is the popular internet here in Tucson. So you could actually drive down the road or walk down the road, and you'll actually start picking up Cox Wi-Fi available, Cox Wi-Fi internet Wi-Fis just in the area. You'll find them in public places, office buildings. But you're wondering, does Cox go around putting up towers? No, but they sneak that into the router that they give to their customers, and their customers end up being, you know, their towers, if you will. So let's say that you're at home and you connect to your Cox Wi-Fi on your router at home. Nothing wrong with that. But now while you're traveling, if you have the auto join feature turned on, it will connect to every single hotspot that it detects that's named Cox. Now, that sounds perfectly fine as long as everything that is labeled Cox is genuinely Cox. So if someone who wanted to do something dishonest, they could just buy a average Joe Schmo router, go into the settings, change the SSID to Cox, and now all kinds of phones that are passing by in that area are now going to automatically be connecting to that. And if they have hacking software in there, now they're taking information. They can be pulling information out of your phone. And you're just walking by. And you have no idea that has happened. You may find out later on. But you see, you know, when people are hacked, of, oh, my goodness, how on earth are they doing it? This is how they're doing it.
Yeah.
Okay? Little things like this.
I actually have a client that's traveling in Europe right now, and he had a huge problem. I didn't think it was possible with the iPhone, but somehow a keylogger was on his phone, and they hacked everything. They hacked his PayPal account. They hacked into everything. He had to wipe his phone totally clean. And he's traveling, so he doesn't, you know, credit cards, like everything.
Oh, my.
It's a mess.
Now, before the show, Sherry and I, we were talking about a friend of hers that was part of a scam. Now, any of these scams or any of these things about privacy or identity theft, they all circumvent the same type of thing, where you have a plan, you have a prospective person that you're trying to take advantage of. But can you tell us a little bit what happened? This is like the real estate scam.
That was actually me.
Wasn't
a friend.
Oh, my
goodness. Job scam was the friend.
Oh, okay.
The real estate thing was me.
Okay, so what happened?
And I mean, it didn't go very far without me figuring it out. I was pretty suspicious from the get-go, because seemed to be too good to be true.
So how did it start?
How does it start? Well, it starts with someone takes a home. It's actually a real home, and they put it up for rent on like Zillow, you know, and they have it looks just like a regular listing. They'll even steal pictures from when the house was for sale before and put all those pictures up and recreate the whole listing. But they put them, it's under their account, so they're the contact person. And then when you, and it's always like at some like too good to be true price. Like so this was a really nice house and had everything I wanted. And it was just like, how could that be? You know, because the rental market in Tucson's kind of crazy right now. So this was about 6 months ago. And so I went to look at the house. And I thought, wow, this is really nice. But the guy had contacted me, and he gave me like way too much information. He was telling me that he's in the military and he was being deployed, and that's why he needed to rent out the house so quickly and for so little. And like all the utilities were going to be included, which that's weird, right? So there were some red flags from the get-go. But the scammer was actually, he found a real person online that looked respectable, right? And represented himself as that person. And so, like, I told him, hey, I went to look at the house. I'm very interested. And then I was sent a email with a link to a fake TripAdvisor page. And he was going to have me pay rent, like monthly rent, through like a TripAdvisor, as if it was an Airbnb or a TripAdvisor rental.
Okay, right.
And that's when I went, okay, but the TripAdvisor page looked very real, you know, TripAdvisor logo,
well,
everything.
You see, now just to reiterate some things based on that. So he's already setting the foundation of the excuses. Oh, the reason why I can't accept it because I'm being deployed and just paid into this system. Lots of companies do that, okay, but they usually use banks. They usually use management companies with an office and a real person, you know.
Or a property manager.
Yeah, property manager, yeah. So
I did two things. There's a couple of things that people should always do, because there's a bunch of different variations of these rental scams, but you should always go to the county parcel search. You can go to every county has a parcel search site where you can put in the address and look at who owns the property to make sure that jives with what you're being told.
Okay.
And sometimes you're dealing with the property manager, but you can at least inquire as to where the owners live so that, you know, it matches on there.
Right.
So searching the county and then also just you always looking, like I looked up that person, the person's name. I looked him up on LinkedIn, and it was an actual person, but he was far too old to be being deployed in the military. His military service was long over.
Okay.
And I reached out to him, and he immediately responded back and said, I am being inundated with all of these messages from people. Like, I do not own a property in Tucson. He lives in Phoenix. You know, he runs a big company up there.
And did you ever see this person face to face?
No.
Did they have access to the piece of real estate that you're interested in?
Well, that was the other red flag. It was like I was asking to be shown the property.
Yeah.
And they were just like, well, you can go take a look, and here's some more pictures. And he gave me way more pictures than what was in the listing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, sent me like 30 pictures via email.
Mm, okay.
I think to try to convince me to put down the deposit, you know, before actually seeing the house.
Right. And he was being deployed. Probably the next email that he was probably going to, or the next message, oh, I'm being deployed. I've been moved up. I'm being deployed tomorrow.
Right.
Do you want it or not? Okay,
yeah.
I need, you know, bam. And that, see that's one of the common things with these scams is they'll speedy you up through the process. If they sense any hesitation, they'll put something in there to make you say, okay, yes.
You can always look up the property, like TripAdvisor.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of looked at it and it looked a little funny to me, so I went on a separate browser window to TripAdvisor to try to find the property, and of course it wasn't there.
Interesting. And you could always look at the address bar to see exactly where you are. If they do that with banks, they do that with PayPal. It's not that hard to copy an entire page of a website, put it onto your own
domain. No, there's software that'll do it for you.
You know, so you can't always go by how something looks. You actually have to choose and verify, and which goes on to the next point about always verify who people are. For example, when people call you on the phone or people come to your house, okay. I don't know about you, but you know, I sometimes buy a lot of my clothes at Goodwill. You know, used clothing. You know, of course I wash it off pretty well, and then I start wearing it. But you know that there are uniforms that are being sold for $6. You can be a UPS delivery guy. Now all you need is brown pants, okay? And now you can be delivering a box, or you can be have an excuse to knock on somebody's door, and there many people won't even doubt. So by the way, if you do want to know if somebody really is from FedEx or UPS that's knocking on your door, where's your truck? Where's your truck?
Well, now like Amazon, they have the private delivery drivers, so they're not even always in a marked vehicle.
Mm-hmm. But you know, Amazon, I don't think the scammers have figured out a way to. But what they have done though with UPS, now that they know that people are looking for the UPS trucks, what they'll do is they'll just follow a FedEx truck and they'll wait for the driver to go to house A, and then they'll go to house B. Yeah, this is FedEx. Yeah, there's my truck out there. You know, can you sign for this? Or then they force their way in, you know, get you to open up the door, something like that. So you need to find a way to verify who people are. If you're not expecting a package, you know, just leave it at the door, okay? Or ask them to step away from the door, and then you come out and close the door behind you and lock the door with your keys or something. You know, we're living in the world where we have to verify who people are. We have to have some sort of system of verification. And that just doesn't go hand – that goes hand in hand with not just verifying people that are face-to-face with you, but also people that call you on the phone. Which is one of these. I actually did another show on this, just this one thing, on my other show, Technology Frustrations and Gimmicks Show, which I hope that you can listen to on the www.techshow.xyz website. I did a special program, it's only about 15 minutes long, where I learned about this new scam. So here's the way the scam works. And this goes along with protecting your identity, because someone can actually – they're not even hacking the computer. They're hacking you. They're hacking your ability to release information about yourself. So someone – let's say that it's not that hard to find out what bank, for example, okay? I can do a service for you. You can pay me with a check. The name of the bank is right there on the check, okay? I can follow you around. Oh, you went into Bank of America. You must have an account. It's not that hard to find out where people bank. And it's not that hard to get people's phone number. Okay, I can get your phone number. I can know what bank you. Now, what I can do is I can fudge a phone number. Okay, for the caller ID. There's software out there where you can call somebody with a different caller ID. So the phone that you're calling from is not the caller ID that shows up on the recipient. You can punch in any phone number that you want, and that's the number that's going to show up on their caller ID. And if you know the phone number of the bank, you can put the bank's phone number as the caller ID to show up so that the other person thinks that their bank is calling them. And it even says it right there in the caller ID. Okay? Now, that's stage one of the scam. Stage two, you answer. What they're going to say is, play along with me. I'll say, Ms. Barker, this is Aaron over at Chase Bank, and we've had some fraud alerts. Were you in Florida last week by any chance? Because we have some transactions in Florida.
No, I wasn't.
You weren't? Okay. Do me a favor. We have to send this to our fraud department. I just need to verify who you are. Can we send you a text message? And can you just read off the text message just to verify who you are, please?
Sure.
Okay. And the text message is sent. What's that verification number, please?
3271.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hold on 1 second. Okay. We have this sent over to the fraud department. Expect a phone call tomorrow. Thank you very much for your time. Have a good day. Bye. Guess what? You were just hacked.
Yep.
What they were actually doing on the other side of the phone is they found your email address somehow, and they know that you do business at that bank. They were probably at that bank's website, and they just simply pushed the button that they forgot their password. And then when they click to that they forgot their password, it gives them three options. We can send you a verification code through your phone. We can send you a verification through your email. They're just going, yeah, send me a text message. And they have you on the phone at the very time that they're hitting that button. And now you just give them that verification number, and now they have access into your bank account. And then just minutes after there, they already have something set up where they can actually take all your stuff. So how do you stop this from happening? Well, again, you have to verify who people are. If someone calls you up saying that there's fraud on your account, oh my goodness, I can't take the call. Look,
that doesn't happen anyway. They just shut down your card.
Yes, that's true.
They're not going to call you.
And then you call them, hey, what's up? Why'd you shut off my card? So that's the way, yeah, so you're
that's
right.
That's how it works.
Exactly. So if you get a call like that, what do you do? You tell them, oh, I can't talk right now. Can I call you back? All right. And then you call your real bank and you ask them, is everything on my card okay? They say, yeah, sure. Everything's okay. Thank you very much. Goodbye. That's how you stop things like that. Now, by the way, these are ingenious ways. See, people find these little things to find. And there's all kinds of ways that they can do it. But you can protect yourself if you know how to how they work and that they and people are actually doing that. I wanted to look at this other one. It's number 64 in yours, Sherry. So, and that is to get credit reports on your kids and infants. So, the reason why this is the case, those of you that have children that are younger than teenage years, your Social Security number is issued at birth, right? So it has a name, a Social Security number at birth that's issued to people that are born, right? So when's the first time do you think that families actually start looking at the credit report? When they're 18 years old or
when they get their first credit card.
When they get their first credit card, teenager or their
college,
you know, financial aid, things like that. So if someone could get it early enough, they could start a whole credit thing even before anyone even looks at it. And if nobody ever looks at it, they can change your address, they can change your phone number, they can put all kinds of information on that credit report and run almost scot-free for, 16, 18 years. Okay?
I've actually read many nightmare stories on the personal finance subreddit where it was actually a family member that took out the credit card in the kid's name. It was like a divorce situation, and one of the parents, did it and racked up all this debt. So then the kid goes at 18 or whatever to do something, and he can't do it because he's got all these problems on his credit already.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable that these things are happening. Because, they're the ones that actually have the information, that's on there. So it's kind of funny that it's kind of interesting that it's the family, that's usually at fault. But it could also be a disgruntled worker at the hospital that has access to that information. But of course, there would be a huge breach of privacy, So a lot of these hospitals, they fall under HIPAA. And I used to be a paramedic in New York City, so I know all about HIPAA. But HIPAA helps private information about one's medical history and their medical information not being spread by others. So, chances of there being a leak from a hospital, very unlikely. It does happen, okay? Not very likely, because if a person is caught doing that, they'll lose their job. And they won't be able to get another job in that same profession.
If the hospital is charged with a HIPAA violation, they pay six-figure fines for that.
Yeah, and and I think it's what I was told, it's something in the ballpark of $10,000 to $20,000 per piece of information. So if they got your name that leaked out, that's $10,000 to $20,000. Your address, another $10,000 to $20,000. Okay, the date of your visit to the doctor, that's another $10,000 to $20,000. So they just rack them up. They just start piling up really, really fast. And if they find out who's responsible for that leak, the person cannot, number one, they'll get fired, and they cannot get another job in that profession, because it attaches, it goes with them, to every single job application that they ever put out, any time after that. So again, you need to beware, or make sure that you're checking, even if you have children, their credit report, if you haven't already. And make sure you're doing that as often as you're doing your own. I think if it hasn't happened in the first couple of years, and you keep your kids' Social Security card in a safe deposit box, if nothing's going to happen in a couple of years, I think you're pretty safe all the way to 16, 18 years old.
Unless it's a family member that does it.
And they're listening to this show. Yeah. So we're empowering the scammers too. So sorry about that. But anyway, but we're doing this show for the good of the masses, we should say. So the another tip that we have here is not to lend your computer out, okay? So you're a nice person. A friend of yours wants to borrow your computer. He really needs it. He needs a job. He needs something. No. Okay. But if you really want to be nice, okay, what you can do, you can create a guest account on your computer. What a guest account is, when you turn your computer on, okay, and it comes on, this is both with Windows and with Apple, okay, it actually has an account that has your name, okay? If you set up the computer and you made it to have your name comes up when you turn the computer on, that's great. That means that your name is your account. You could actually have several names and several accounts on the computer. But if you have a computer that has several users, you can actually have several people on the computer. And when they turn the computer on, they actually have to select which name they are. And each one of those names that they select of who they are can have a password associated with it. So there is a way to turn on what's called a guest account. And so anytime you want to lend out your computer, you have to have this guest account turned on and make sure that they're logging into the guest account. You secure yours with the password. So even if they log out of the guest account and try to get into your account, they have to get a password. Then they're going to ask you for the password. You're not going to give them the password because you just want them to be in the guest account. The guest account will not allow you to make administrative changes to the computer. Mm-hmm. It won't give you access to the websites that you've been to. It won't give them access to the passwords that you use for the various sites that you log into, your bank statements, your credit card statements, all that. All of that will be blocked from the guest account. And they're just using the computer as a guest, as if it were a public computer, like out of the library. All the cash is clear on that account. So you don't want to have people using your account. If you're someone that does, and if it's necessary for you to always be lending out your computer, make sure you have that guest account enabled.
On Apple, I don't know if it happens on Microsoft or PC, but on Apple, they can't even save files. Like when they log out, the files are deleted, like everything's cleaned off.
On Windows, you can save files, but you cannot download programs. You can't install programs because that would be an administrative
function. But like you can't even save anything to the desktop or anything on Apple. It like deletes it when they log out of the guest account.
Okay. That's good. Again, that's another way that we can keep things safe. And I'd like to just do maybe one more, and that is this is a little bit scary, and I'll tell you the little bit of a quick little story. When I went to many years ago, I needed to make a copy of my car keys, so I went to Home Depot, you know, and all these hardware, national big box chains, they all have these key copying machines. So I put in there, there's a new girl that was working there. And you know how the old machines, how they had, okay, put your original key into this slot and put your key to be copied in this other slot? Well, she got the two mixed up. She put my original key in the copy slot and the key to be copied in the original. Now, theoretically, it should just, those cutters should just fly right over the ridges, but there was a little bit of a snag in there, and it cut off one of the top parts of my key, my original key, and that key no longer worked. Okay. I complained to the manager, blah, 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 but I still had a key that didn't work. So this time, later, this is maybe about 6 months ago, I just made a habit from that day forward to always make sure. I said, make sure you put it in the right slot, you know, whenever I have it. So I was at a store. This was actually pretty scary. So he says to me, oh, no, we don't have slots anymore. We just put the key inside of it, and there's a camera that scans the key and then makes a copy of it. So nothing even touches your key. It's just a camera. I said, oh, no. What's waiting for? What's the next step? Someone's going to find a way to hack this
system. It's a service that they have. I just used it. And it's an app that goes on your phone.
Oh, no.
And then if you lose all your keys, you can go to Home Depot and get your keys.
No.
That's what they sold me on.
What is happening now where if someone just gets a high-definition picture with their camera phone, they can make a copy of your key just if they have a picture of your keys. Is that correct?
No. You have to have – it's a service.
It's a service.
It's a company that – I can't remember the name of it. It's on my phone, which we have running right now, so I can't look.
Okay.
But it's called Key Something, and it's not Home Depot. It's owned – it's a third-party company that they're using, and it saves –
Your keys,
so that in case you lose everything, you can go and get a key.
Oh,
wherever they have these kiosks.
Play along with me.
Sure.
Sherry, I got to go to the bathroom. Can I get your bathroom key real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sitting on the toilet. I'm logging into this app. It's asking for pictures of my keys.
No, you have to go to Home Depot to get the key registered with the service.
Okay, so you still have to go into a store?
You have to go. They have to do it.
They have to do it.
At the kiosk. There's nothing through the app except...
I don't know about that.
You just register through the app.
Okay. Well, you know, the potential is there. So I would still say be careful who you lend your keys out. If you rent your car out or somebody's watching your house and they're, you know, they have access to your keys, what's stopping them from going into a Home Depot, pretending to be you, giving their keys to the person over the counter, logging into this app, and now, a month later, I lost my keys. Can you make me copies?
Right.
Bam. Now they got all your keys. And access to your house, access to your cars, and access to your life. And now they can possibly steal your identity over other things. So, you know, we need to be careful. You know, the key to not being a falling victim to a lot of these things is to have more information about it. Therefore, anytime we do a show or you see anything on the news media about security, cybersecurity, or anything that has to do with protecting your identity, okay, listen to it, okay? Because there's always new and new ways that they're coming out. We want to thank everyone for listening to the show today and for our new co-host, Sherry Barker. Okay, we want to warmly welcome her to the show, and hopefully we'll have many good shows with her. We also want to thank the Business Radio X studio for allowing us to do this special show today. It's off of our normal regular scheduled program, but we're going to be back next month, in just a few weeks actually, where we do our technology when it comes to healthcare show. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Until then, that's it for this episode. Irregardless of what platform you're listening to this podcast, there is a share button. So please help us out and share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues on social media, email, or direct them to the website at TucsonBusinessRadioX.com. Stay tuned for more episodes of our show. Until then, see you next time and know your technology.